there'll be nothing one day, and the next day there'll be a ton of stuff there. You know, there might be a big old crack that opened up that's bottomless.
Investigating a crash site in tricky terrain. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Girdwood may have another option for retaining troopers for law enforcement, but some residents aren't happy with it.
We would, in essence, be subsidizing the state of Alaska and the residents of South Central that travel the safety corridor.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
The Alaska House plans to continue pursuing a legal challenge to Governor Bill Walker's authority to expand Medicaid on his own. Lawmakers faced a deadline on whether to appeal a judge's decision tossing the challenge brought last summer by the Legislative Council. An appeal was filed on behalf of the House. A state court judge in March dismissed the case brought by the Legislative Council, upholding Walker's action and finding that the Federal Social Security Act requires Medicaid expansion. Senate Majority Leader Republican John Coghill this week said he'd recommended lawmakers drop the case. While he said he supported the lawsuit, he felt support had dissipated. The council, in its suit, argued that the expansion population is an optional group that cannot be covered unless approved by the legislature. Democratic lawmakers say the House leadership doesn't have the authority to act on their own in pursuing the appeal. Democrats point to an opinion by the legislature's nonpartisan director of legal services, Doug Gardner. Gardner informed Senator Gary Stevens in March that both houses of the legislature would have to vote to pursue an appeal. Those votes never occurred. Era Helicopters has identified its pilot who was critically injured in yesterday's crash at Norris Glacier near Juneau as Jiri Hannes. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has more.
39-year-old Jiri Hannes was medevaced to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle on Thursday with critical injuries. A hospital spokeswoman Friday afternoon said he's in serious condition in intensive care. Era spokesman Tim O'Leary says Era's operations in Juneau have been suspended temporarily. He says the start date of the seasonal Heli-Mush tour on Norris Glacier has also been pushed back from May 12th to May 16th. O'Leary says the pilot was headed up to the glacier at the time of the accident to supply the dog camp. The helicopter itself,
it's in pretty rough shape, so it'll be part of the investigation to see if it can, what can be salvaged.
Mike Hodges is the investigator in charge on this crash for the National Transportation Safety Board.
This will be a full investigation done by the NTSB, and as of right now, we're waiting on weather conditions to cooperate for recovery operations, and so we're just kind of on standby right now.
A preliminary report is expected to be published in 5 to 10 days. It's not unusual for weather to limit access to the site. Independent videographer Paul Heeman got stuck on the glacier for 3 days once.
You hear the helicopters on the other side just trying to get over, and they can't get over. And they, you know, you have your bags ready to jump on and get out of there, and sat there for 3 days because the weather changed, the ceilings changes around those mountains so fast that you, once they come in, sometimes you don't got a window to get out.
Heeman has spent several weeks on Norris Glacier in recent years following the dog sled operation. He said the sled dog camp is sited in a pretty flat basin, but there are some risks. Besides weather, the ice itself can be hazardous. He said workers use long poles to regularly check for hidden ice bridges and crevasses.
There'll be nothing one day, and the next day there'll be a ton of stuff there. You know, there might be a big old crack that opened up that's bottomless.
Alaska Heli-Mush partners with Era Helicopters for its dog sledding tours on the Norris Glacier. On their website, they describe Era as the oldest and safest helicopter company in Alaska. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Girdwood's Board of Supervisors has been offered another option for law enforcement in the community. Residents voted last month to pay extra property taxes for police protection because state budget cuts are forcing the Alaska State Trooper Post in Girdwood to shut down on July 1st. The Board of Supervisors has explored a plan to use officers from nearby Whittier to patrol Girdwood, although no firm agreement is in place. Now troopers have offered to continue to staff the Girdwood Post for $600,000 a year. Sam Daniel, who chairs the Board of Supervisors Public Safety Committee, says he discussed it with Trooper Captain Jim Cockrell earlier this week.
They believe that it would be possible to continue to offer public safety services in Girdwood through the Alaska State Troopers on a three-year grant basis, and that would include having a sergeant and two officers still based out of the Girdwood Post, and the troopers would pay to keep the post open, where they would still be focused on highway traffic enforcement, but would respond inside Girdwood Valley and provide random patrols.
The trooper offer includes coverage of Bird, Rainbow, Indian, and Portage valleys. The legislature and the governor would have to agree to the plan. But at a public meeting on Thursday, some Girdwood residents complained about the trooper proposal.
The meeting last night, there was a very strong concern among the community that we would be paying for what had previously been a statewide service, that we would, in essence, be subsidizing the state of Alaska and the residents of South Central that travel the safety corridor.
Daniel says the Whittier option still on the table has a cost of $610,000, but his committee would like to see that and the trooper number reduced. His committee is planning to send out a request for proposals to any entity that has expressed interest in providing law enforcement to Girdwood. The oil and gas company Hillcorp is facing a $20,000 penalty from the state for unsafe use of equipment on the North Slope. It's the latest in a string of violations for Hillcorp, which a state agency says has developed a pattern of regulatory noncompliance. APRN's Rachel Waldholz reports.
The penalty stems from a series of actions in April and May 2015, when Hillcorp was conducting repairs on a well at its Milne Point unit on the North Slope. During the work, the company lost control of the well and had to use a blowout preventer to shut it in and stop the flow of fluids. But that, in and of itself, wasn't the problem. Kathy Forrester is with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the state agency charged with ensuring the safety of all wells in Alaska.
Having to use the blowout prevention equipment in and of itself isn't a bad thing. That's what it's there for. It's like, how many times are you glad you have your seatbelt on?
The problem was what happened next. The commission says the company failed to properly report the incident, calling Hillcorp's communications misleading and incomplete. Then the company didn't test the blowout preventer before continuing with its work. And this isn't the first time Hillcorp has run into trouble. Commissioners attached a document listing some 25 violations since 2012. Altogether, the commission has proposed over $1 million in fines, though some of those penalties are still under adjudication. In its decision, the commission called the Milne Point incident emblematic of ongoing compliance problems at Hillcorp's operations, saying the disregard for regulations is endemic to Hillcorp's approach in Alaska. But Forrester says the company has pledged to do better going forward.
And recent conversations with my staff indicate that they're seeing a cooperative effort to understand and comply with the regs.
Hillcorp can still appeal the penalty. The company didn't reply to requests for an interview by broadcast time. Based in Texas, Hillcorp is relatively new to Alaska, but over the last half decade, it's built operations both in Cook Inlet and on the North Slope, becoming a significant oil producer in the state, as well as the largest natural gas producer in the inlet. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, high school students learn the art of cabin building.
These are young kids that start this program their freshman year, so we're talking freshman girls and freshman boys here that are running power tools, which I think is pretty amazing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence,
and by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
As the legislature continues work in Juneau, budgets remain in flux. But so far, there's one pocket of state government not anticipating any more cuts, the State Board of Fisheries. Glenn Haight is the board's executive director.
At this point, we have the same size budget as last year, so we haven't taken any cuts, and that's been purposefully done through the department, and I think the legislature's honored that.
But Haight says the picture isn't perfect.
Given that next year is a fairly expensive meeting cycle, Cook Inlet's coming up, both lower and upper, Kodiak and a couple of the meetings, Board of Games has two more meetings, that we may not have enough money to complete it as normally planned.
Haight will provide an update on the budget at the board's teleconference meeting on May 24th, but doesn't expect any action to be taken then. A new study identifies factors influencing wolf viewing opportunities in Denali National Park. Seeing a wolf has long been a draw for Denali visitors, but it's become increasingly rare to sight the predators along the park road. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The study conducted by Park Service and university researchers looked at Denali wolf harvest and sighting data from a 17-year span, including 10 years when there was a no-wolf kill buffer zone on state land bordering Denali's northeastern perimeter, an area where often viewed packs commonly roam. Denali National Park Science and Resources team leader Dave Schierichauer says research shows wolf viewing was better during the buffer years.
The buffer was in place from 2000 to 2010. And during the time the buffer was in place, visitors were almost twice as likely to see wolves than during the period when the buffer was not in place.
Schierichauer says the buffer was one of three primary drivers of wolf viewing success identified through statistical analysis.
The proximity of den sites to the park road explained the most effect on the sighting index. The presence of the buffer ranked second, and the third, which only accounted for 15% of the effect, was the number of wolves harvested in the previous year.
Schierichauer says an average of five park-based wolves were reported killed by people annually throughout the study time frame, indicating the buffer helped protect wolves seen along the park road. Denali wolf advocate Rick Steiner credits the study, which found a similar correlation in Montana's Yellowstone National Park, with scientifically linking wolf harvest with decreased viewing opportunity.
We have known this for many years, but this is the first actual quantitative confirmation of that, and so it's very useful. It's good.
Steiner faults the study for failing to connect harvest with a broader decline of Denali's wolf population to record lows of about 50 animals, citing a single trapping incident that had a cascade effect.
The 2012 Grant Creek debacle, where one significant breeding female was killed. The pack did not pup, they didn't den, they dispersed, and they dropped from 17 to 3 wolves that summer.
Steiner says a similar scenario played out last year with the East Fork pack. The park's Schierichauer contends non-harvest drivers are also at work.
Many years of low snowpack, the location and availability of prey, and other things that we don't understand yet.
What we're seeing in Denali right now is often the case of a naturally functioning ecosystem, if you will.
State Game Board member Nate Turner lives, hunts, and traps in the Denali region. Turner says it's common for wolves to undergo localized population cycles.
Denali right now, I would say, is in low-density equilibrium, where you have a low density of prey populations and limited viability for increase in predator populations.
The park-funded wolf study was inspired by Alaska Board of Game questions about the effectiveness of the Denali buffer. The board has reached the end of a self-imposed moratorium on consideration of buffer proposals and will accept them at an interior issues meeting next year. The park's Schierichauer expects the agency to submit one while Steiner is pursuing federal acquisition of the buffer area. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A Healy area program that teaches teens how to build cabins has been nationally recognized. The School to Work program at Tri-Valley High School has received the National Park Service George and Helen Hartzog Outstanding Volunteer Service Award. Denali Park Centennial Coordinator Lynn McAloon says since 1998, the program has built nearly three dozen cabins to replace aging seasonal staff housing at Denali National Park. McAloon credits the program with helping the park as well as local kids.
Park employees and teachers team up to teach the class. It's conducted outdoors in all types of inclement Alaska weather. These are young kids that start this program their freshman year, so we're talking freshman girls and freshman boys here that are running power tools, which I think is pretty amazing.
NPS Alaska Region Director Bert Frost presented cabin program students and instructors with the National Volunteer Service Award at an event at Denali Park headquarters yesterday. Could Skagway go 3 months without ferry service? The Alaska Department of Transportation is planning a $6 million ferry dock refurbishment that would ideally happen this winter. The project would take the dock out of commission for a few months, which DOT says could leave Skagway without marine highway service. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
It's an old dock, and it continues to deteriorate, and the longer we put off the refurbishment project, the more expensive it becomes for the state.
Jeremy Woodrow is spokesman for DOT. His agency met with Skagway leaders in recent weeks to discuss what to do with the ferry dock.
Right now what we're doing with maintenance costs is basically putting band-aids on an issue that needs to be fixed sooner than later.
Let's talk about that sooner option. If DOT refurbishes the dock this winter, Woodrow says it would cause a 3-month disruption in service. Borough Manager Scott Hahn doesn't like that option.
We would have to survive. You get on with, but I don't know how you make up for that, because there's so many people that rely on being able to get over to Juneau for dental appointments and health appointments and making other connections, and it's huge.
Without ferry service, Skagway residents would have to rely on flights, which are iffy in the winter, and the highway, which is also at the mercy of winter weather.
It's a very difficult thing for us to handle, because we don't really have a road. You know, if you can say we can drive up into Canada, but the Canadian border is not open all day long, you know, so there's difficulties there. And then getting to somewhere else in Alaska is mind-blowing as far as how many miles it is.
Woodrow says DOT doesn't want to cut off Skagway from ferry service.
We're trying to exhaust all of our options before we really say that there will be service disrupted.
One of those options is to put off the refurbishment until next winter. Woodrow says the Matanuska is scheduled for engine replacement then, which means the Kennecott may fill in for the Mat. If it does, the Kennecott would be able to make port calls at one of Skagway's other docks. Woodrow says there's a very specific reason the Kennecott would need to be the fill-in ferry.
Really, the only options we have for providing vehicle service is through the existing dock, using the ramps that are on that dock, as well as the vehicle doors that are in the current Marine Highway System fleets, or to use the Kennecott, which has a vehicle elevator that could then call on one of the cruise ship docks.
Even if the project were delayed to winter of 2017 and the Kennecott filled in, Skagway would see severely reduced service. Woodrow says the Kennecott would sail all the way to and from Prince Rupert, so it would make just 1 or 2 port calls in Skagway per week. Woodrow says the downside to delay is that the state will have to keep making band-aid repairs. It would be more cost-effective to get the project done as soon as possible.
We are still exploring every option possible to see if there is a way that we can provide service to Skagway while the dock is being worked on, even if it means passenger only, foot traffic only, no vehicles.
Woodrow says DOT will continue talking to Skagway officials about the possibilities. He says the department will probably make a decision about when to refurbish the ferry dock by the end of the summer. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
Yesterday, the Skagway Borough Assembly voted to recommend DOT delay the project to winter of 2017.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The weeks are counting down until the first salmon return home to Alaska rivers and streams. Alaska's people live lives that are deeply connected to salmon. Alaska's economy and families are fueled by these relationships. Learn more about Alaska's salmon at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettesworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation. K
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, art outreach. Bristol Bay artist Abayu Moore has painted murals in Anchorage and Juneau. Moore recently received a grant from the state's Percent for Arts program to paint two 60-foot murals that will be shipped to Bethel in the fall to be installed in the youth detention center there. The artist wants her murals to bring hope to young people who have committed offenses in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region. But as KDLG's Hannah Colton reports, her outreach starts much closer to home in the village of Aleknagik.
When you walk into Abayu Moore's temporary studio, the first thing you see is a fire truck. The red engine belongs to the city of Aleknagik, which is renting out their shop building for Abayu's project. The space is tall and airy, and while Abayu's there, it's always open to visitors.
Hello? Come in.
Today, it's a couple of homeschool families who live nearby. The four teenage girls are wearing their painting clothes, and Abayu is always happy to get other people involved, so she puts them to work.
And then I'll need one person on the roller action doing a second layer on this green.
I'll do that.
Abayu is in her early 30s. She's Yupik. She grew up in Twin Hills and Dillingham, and her art often contains visions from a Bristol Bay childhood. This mural stretches the entire length of the shop wall.
The idea behind it was that when people are sitting around the table, you know, and your grandparents are around the table all drinking coffee and that sound of laughter, and so it's supposed to be a happy, uplifting coffee time.
So far, the grandma-grandpa figures with their coffee mugs are just color blocks of blue and yellow and tan, but already they look pretty jolly.
When I look at them, then I'll start smiling back at them, and so that's been sort of a philosophy. I did that intentionally. I made all of these guys smiling, hoping that the kids that are in the room will also smile when they see these big smiling faces.
She's talking about the kids at the Bethel Youth Facility, where these panels are going to be installed in a few months. But her smile trick seems to be working already on her helpers in the warehouse.
In middle school?
Aubrey Romo is 17. She's painting the jacket on a man wearing a trucker hat. She says he reminds her of one of the locals here in Aleknagik.
Okay, I picked Steve Kohler because it's a very blue color, and he's sitting there with his cup of coffee, and maybe he's about to go ready, you know, plow our road for the morning or something. That's what I imagine.
This is a person you know.
He's the man to go around here.
Aubrey and the other three aren't what you might think of as typical high schoolers. They're polite, enthusiastic, great attitudes. They've done all kinds of activities through their homeschool program. Knitting, beading, pottery, even surfing and snowboarding. Still, 13-year-old Hildy Ball says hanging out at Abayu's mural project is pretty special.
Well, I actually never thought I'd meet Abayu. You can see Abayu paintings all over town. I was like, oh, she must be a celebrity here. And then I met her. I'm just like, oh, she's like just another person. I was like, it's so cool.
Before the girls leave, Abayu lines them up for a photo to post on her Instagram. She says she posts the pictures because she wants people to understand that being an artist is a legit career option, even out in the bush.
I love it when people stop by. I like it when people are inspired by this, or even when they start getting competitive, it makes it even better, because I know that's how I started. Was looking at what other people were doing and realizing what they were getting paid for it and thinking, well, gosh, I might be able to do that better. And so I'd like people to think that way, especially in Dillingham. I want the art community to really step it up.
Abayu's previous works are all over downtown Dillingham. They're projects that often took a lot of organization and gathering community input. But she has two young kids now, and not nearly as much time on her hands.
I've slowed down a little bit, quite a bit. So I want someone else to take that.
There are plenty of plain walls left in Bristol Bay, she points out.
And there's room for different voices.
Maybe there'll be something that makes you think a little bit more, you know? Maybe someone will go off of what I've been doing and go the opposite and try to get people thinking about how to make other changes. Like, I might be missing something just because I'm into subsistence and fishing and things like that. What else is there that we love about this area? Or what else is there to say about Bristol Bay? I think it'd be cool to see someone else's mural up.
There's a saying, and Abayu seems to get it, you can't be what you can't see. That's part of the reason she's painting this mural here in the village, in full view of her neighbors. For AK, I'm Hannah Colton.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Tim Pominville of Eagle River. He moved to Alaska a little more than a year ago.
You know, I really thought I was going to first come up here and, like, you know, get on a fishing boat, try all these new things. The first job I ended up getting in the first 2 weeks, it was working for a meat market, Mike's Meats in Eagle River. So I worked for him for 2 months. I learned a lot, and I never thought I'd come running back to the service industry. I really love bartending and restaurant management, and then I just found a home at Glacier Brew House, downtown Anchorage. The first few months, not knowing a whole lot of people, I kind of shed a lot of my possessions and just stuff. And so that was the biggest humbling thing, I would say, is just rebuilding. But it was so liberating to know that you could go anywhere with whatever was important to you and just kind of repave, you know, rebuild. If you're a business-minded person, if you've got a great idea and it's not being done up here, you know, you've got a nice opportunity to make your mark and just share that and bring that to the community. If you're bored in Alaska, I'm sorry, but you're probably just being lazy because there's always something to do. There's so many trails, and I still want to go on a big commercial fishing boat, and I also want to fly and land in a plane that lands on water. I've never done that, a float plane. I just can't wait to do that.
Tim Pominville lives in Eagle River. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Hannah Colton and Zoe Sobel. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer and Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Molly Dishner in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Emily Files in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ExxonMobil Alaska, working with more than 100 Alaska communities and thousands of Alaskans. Today, ExxonMobil is producing natural gas condensate from the Point Thompson facilities. Alaska Pacific University is still accepting applications for its Early Honors Program. The Alaska Pacific University Early Honors Program satisfies high school graduation requirements while students earn college credits from a regionally accredited institution. Early Honors students gain these benefits and make the best use of their senior year of high school. More at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.